At this time, I'd like to remind all of you to silence your cell phones. And it is my pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, John H. from Dana Point, California.
Good evening, everybody. My name's John, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's kind of a new thing for me to say. I've been able to say that most of my life. I knew I drank a lot, but I really didn't ever want to admit that I was an alcoholic. I thought it would be a lot cooler to be a drug addict. So let's see. You know, the fact is that a lot of my story tonight, you're going to hear, I'm going to talk about drugs a little bit. It's part of my story. I fully respect Alcoholics Anonymous and their singleness of purpose. I truly do. Alcoholics saved my life. But tonight it's my story, and I got to talk a little bit about drugs because it's a big part of my story. I'm a kid. I grew up in the 60s. Let's go back a little bit. My first sobriety date was May 29th, 1955. That's before Lois. That's also my birthday, the day I was born. So, I kept that sobriety date until December 31st, 1964. So that's I'm 9 years old. My parents had a New Year's Eve party, and I got into the drinks that were left behind, and I drank a lot, and I drank to a blackout. I drank to where I was on my bed, on my back, vomiting, aspirating my own vomit, and my brother came and rolled me over and probably saved my life. I woke up the next day with the worst headache ever. Everybody was watching football, and it was all I wanted to do was. And everybody was giving me a hard time because they saw me drunk the night before. My brothers were all. They got a big kick out of it, and of course I was in trouble with my parents, and that was something that I was going to get used to. But and you know, most people would never drink again if they would have gone through what I got. I mean, I woke up and there was vomit everywhere, and everybody was mad at me. And I did something a little weird. From that day on, I started to fill up bottles. I'd steal liquor from my father a little bit at a time, and I'd fill up a bottle that I had in the garage. And then when the bottle was full, I'd do that same thing again. And I thought that, you know, I don't think that's normal. So I think that I probably was an alcoholic from a very early age. Like I said, I'm a kid of the 60s, and I didn't have a lot of sober time from that first relapse that I had in December of 1964. And I soon found marijuana. It was at my junior high school. I was a little young for Woodstock, so I always thought that, you know, I wish I could say I went to Woodstock. I think that'd be really bitching, but I was a little young for that, you know. But I started using drugs at a pretty early age, and there was always alcohol. Alcohol was always part of my story. One of my friends could always manage to get us some booze. So my drug use continued throughout the 70s, and along with drinking alcohol a lot. I mean, the 70s were just a great time to be alive. There's a couple people that can vouch for that here. You know, my saying is that in the 60s they experimented with drugs. In the 70s we knew exactly what we were doing. So we did too. And you know, the alcohol, like I said, alcohol was always there. I'm not one of those guys that's going to say, you know, that alcohol wasn't my real problem, you know, or when I drank I'd use drugs. I drank. I would do a couple hits of Orange Sunshine and 30 beers. I mean, and that was bitching. That was great. I love that. That got me where I wanted to go. So things. Let's see. I want to get to my next sobriety date, and I was 24 years old. I'd been drinking quite heavily for a long time, and I'm 24 years old. It was another December 31st of 1979, and I'd been at a party, and it was with some of the the drug dealers from Colorado Springs, and we were drinking Dom Perignon, and you know, life was good, and I thought that it didn't get any better than that. You know, I was living a pretty cool life. I had a bunch of friends, and we partied a lot, and had a really good time, and it'd been kind of I'd usually start a pretty good drinking binge on right when football started, so it was towards the end of the year, and it became kind of a habit for me that I'd get into some trouble towards the end of the year. But this particular year, on December 31st, we were at this party, and I wasn't feeling so good, and I kept going outside and vomiting. You know, it wasn't anything new for me to vomit, of course, but something felt a little different. So I got my girlfriend at the time, and I said, we need to go. I'm just not doing good. So I went home, and I went to the bathroom, and I vomited one more time, and it was bright red. And I said, you know, something's really wrong. So I went to the emergency room, and I had they diagnosed me with alcoholic gastritis, and I was going, whoa, boy, I'll never drink again, and that lasted like 3 days. The doctor came in and he asked me if I took a lot of aspirin, and I said, well, yeah, I do. And he goes, well, you know, that might have something to do. You had 7 dime-sized holes in your stomach. He goes, your stomach almost disintegrated. And he goes, you know, the aspirin might have something to do with it. Well, that's not what I heard. What I heard was, oh, it was the aspirin. And so I turned alcoholic gastritis into gastritis. And so, and then, therefore, everything was cool. You know what? I didn't take aspirin for 20 years. Years. And 7 days later, I was in intensive care for 11 days. I was in the hospital for over 20 days. I got 24 units of blood. The thing that I was asking the doctor as I was walking out the door was, when can I drink? I was going to Jamaica in March, and I wanted to make sure I could drink it in March. So and I did. I think I stayed continuously sober for at least 2 months that time. So the next time I sobered up was in the year 2000, and I found out that in the year 2000 that I had a hepatitis C that I picked up from getting those 24 units of blood back in when I was in the hospital in 1980, and pretty devastating news, and you know, the doctor told me that I couldn't drink, and I stopped drinking, and I think I stopped drinking pretty much for 3 years. Like I said, there's a lot of drug use in my story, and I think that I was pretty clean that whole time, even from drugs. I think I was taking clean for me was like I was only doing Xanax and smoking a little dope. So, but you know, that's sober for me. So. You know, and I did this stuff called interferon, and it makes you pretty ill, and it's not the most pleasant stuff to do. And I did it twice, and it didn't work. And my greatest idea was that, you know, okay, then Vicodin and booze. So I would take a handful of Vicodin and drink it down with the booze. And I guess that's the most toxic thing you can do to your liver. So you know, this went on for quite a while. That was the beginning of the end for me. My alcoholism progressed rapidly after that. You know, all through my life, I'd had this history of every couple years I'd end up in the hospital, and I'd start like a really good run right around when football started, and then somewhere around Christmas I'd end up in the hospital. So Christmas Day I spent in the hospital. I spent New Year's Day in the hospital. You know, right around then is when my life would fall apart. So, you know, I found this out in an inventory that me and my sponsor did when I was trying to diagnose myself. So, and find out that I actually had this thing called alcoholism. So after I found out that the interferon treatment hadn't worked and I still had the hepatitis C, I was pretty much intent on drinking myself to death. It didn't really matter to me. I kind of lost the will to live, I suppose. It got pretty bad over the next couple of years. It got pretty bad. By 2004, I was starting to show up in hospitals pretty regularly. I was starting to show up in detoxes and in insane asylums. I mean, right out of the book. At one point, a family member came up to me and said, "You know, Johnny, you got to do something about this." I'd gotten out of detox and I drank immediately after that. I said, "Okay, Susan." My sister, welcome to the Al-Anons. My dad was a drinker, and my sister had gone to Al-Anon, and that pretty much screwed me. So, she knew what to do with me. So. I kind of pushed my will upon her a little bit. You know, I decided I was going to do it my way. I wanted a softer and gentler way. And I was doing an outpatient program. And this was the coolest. It's not like any program I've ever heard of in California. They allowed me to take Xanax and smoke marijuana as long as I didn't smoke crack and drink tequila. So I was going, cool. So that was my program of recovery. So... it worked for 28 days, and I on the 29th I drank, and then after that I made it 15 days, and then I made it 7 days, and then my sister she called me up and she goes, "John, this is not working," and I go, you know. I go, and I totally had another plan. You know, I was sitting there reciting my plan to her, and it was going to be a really good plan, and things were going to work out really good. And I can just imagine what she was thinking on the other end of the line. And by this time, I'd been thrown out of I'd been living in my dad's basement. I had a little cottage industry going down there, selling cocaine, my poor sister, you know, she's listening on the other end of the phone, and I'm sitting there telling her my latest greatest idea, and all of a sudden, as loud as this, I heard, "John, your way doesn't work," and it was that loud, and I kind of looked around, and I was going, "Whoa, better lay off that stuff." So. So I was talking to my sister, and I was sitting there, and once again I heard this voice, and it said, "Honest, it was just like this. It was, John, your way doesn't work." I have no idea where that voice came from. I don't know what it was, but I stopped. And you can ask my sister today. She'll tell you that something in the middle of our conversation, something changed. Something changed. I found out later it's what we call a surrender. I gave up. And I said, "Yeah, Susan, I'll do whatever. I'll do whatever." And so what I did at that point was I turned my will and my life over to my sister, and I didn't even know I'd done that. So I turned it over to my sister, and I said, you know, whatever, I'll do whatever. And so she sent me to a treatment center in Dana Point. And all these little surrenders. I got into the recovery house, and I absolutely turned my will and my life over to the care of this recovery center. And they took me to AA, and I kind of turned my will and my life over to AA. It took me a little while to do that. I was a little scared of the God concept, I knew AA. I was pretty sure AA wouldn't work for me. I have a ex-wife that's sober 19 years, and I'd been to a couple AA meetings, and I was pretty sure it wouldn't work for me. The book says we get beaten into a state of reasonableness, and I was there. I was beaten into a state of reasonableness, thank God. Thank God. I got down the road far enough to where I would, you know, I'd do anything. I got my very first day day in Dana Point, there was a softball. I guess I'd been here a couple days. My first day here was pretty unusual. I took a train from Colorado Springs to out here, and I call it my rolling relapse. And I drank beer all the way, and I'd smoke crack in the restroom and blow it down the little vacuum bathroom, and it was pretty cool. And I got here, and I checked into the recovery home, and in my bag they pulled out my Xanax and my OxyContin, and they go, "Well, you can't have these here." And I went, "Oh, you don't understand." I go, "You look on that bottle, it's got my name. It's by a real legitimate doctor. You can call him in Colorado Springs, and he'll tell you that I need those." And they go, "Well, we're sorry, you can't take those here." So what I did was I took the bottles into the bathroom, and I took all but three out of each one, and I took them all. And I went to my very first meeting in a blackout, and that's as probably as comfortable as I've been in a meeting since then. So. Day three in California, a guy walked up, took one look at me. I probably weighed about 150 pounds, and he said, "You need a sponsor." And I was going, I was wondering how he even knew I was new, but somehow he guessed. And he goes, "Okay, this guy over here, his name's John Spinello, and I can use John Spinello's whole name and not break his anonymity because John passed about a year and a half ago. And this man saved my life. And I can say you that unequivocally, this man saved my life." Very patient with me. You know, he took me through the book, and I was a professed drug addict, and he was patient with me, and he taught me some things out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that I started to identify with. Like I said, I was going to South Coast Recovery, recovery home here, and they were bringing me to meetings, a funny story about this meeting. This room means a lot to me. This meeting means a lot to me. One night I was sitting in one of the rows over there. I seriously thought that was another room there. And I looked. I leaned forward and I was looking into the other room, and I saw some guy there. And I go, "God, that guy needs some help." And then I got the weirdest feeling. I went, "Oh my God, it's me." That's a true story. It freaked me out. I was going, "Oh, it's me." Anyway, and then this meeting in particular, one night, I was pretty new. It was a couple weeks after that. I was starting to, you know, get my head together just a little bit. And I was the newest of newcomers, boy. But I came here, and there was a speaker that night, and he was a drummer for Paul McCartney, and he told his story, and he told the truth about it, the way he used drugs and the way he drank, and I identified. And that's the first time that I really, really identified in a meeting, and that's the first time I got the gift of hope. This guy was better, and he was many years sober. I don't remember his name, but all I remember is I was sitting there. I was so engrossed in what this man was saying. I mean, I was so focused. I mean, it was almost like he was illuminated on the stage. And I can pinpoint that meeting and that man as the guy that gave me my hope back. And that's, you know, that's the magic of the meetings is we come here, and my story hopefully will relate and resonate with somebody in this room, and maybe they'll decide that they want what we have here, and they'll do some work to get that done. I don't know if I got willing right at that moment, but for the first time I thought that Alcoholics Anonymous could work. My drinking wasn't done. I got here on April 23rd, so my sobriety date was April 24th. 42 days later, I drank, and And I don't even know where that came from that day. I woke up that morning, and we had this thing called Green Group and at the recovery home I was at. And I was sitting there going, the San Marcos house hasn't had a relapse in 65 days, and we're doing so good. And then a friend of mine said, let's go to a meeting, and he bought a bottle of vodka and a can of Foster's, and we went to the beach, and I was going to keep an eye on him so he didn't get hurt. And and then I'd really like to know the bar that I had my last drink at. The next memory I have is we're in a bar. The tables are covered with pitchers and bottles of wine, and I'm going, oh, how did this happen? I mean, I honestly got struck drunk. Went back to the recovery home, and of course that doesn't go over well when you show up three sheets to the wind. We've locked our bikes up on PCH and forgot the combination to the lock. So we walked over to Doheny Beach, and there's a parking lot with a bunch of RVs there, and we helped ourselves to bikes there off the back of some RVs. And then me and my buddy, we got separated, and I ended up on PCH talking to the Orange County Sheriff's Department. And they were going to give me a drunk driving ticket for driving on a bicycle. They said they got 8 phone calls about some nut driving in the middle of the road and falling, and I was skinned up from head to foot. My pants were torn. And then I had the audacity that the guy that was going to test me, I said, well, that was going to throw me out, I said, well, you better give me a test. Because I but. And, of course, I was drunk enough, and he said, you got to go. And so I spent the next night I spent that night on San Juan Creek in a sleeping bag with my friend Tom from the recovery home. And I got kicked out for 3 days. They had the three-day rule in the recovery home I was at back then. I was really scared at that point, and I went down to San Clemente, and I thought I was going north, but I ended up south. I had no idea which way was which when I got here, and I ended up down in San Clemente. I was walking along the beach, and I was laying on the rocks by the beach down in San Clemente, and the train went by, and I thought, you know what? How easy would it be just to jump in front of that train, just to jump in front of the train? Because nothing had worked. I didn't know. I was baffled. I was baffled, and I was done. And something switched inside of me, and I remember what you guys did. And I kind of made a commitment to myself. I kind of baptized myself in the ocean. Actually, I was naked. But I don't need to go into my whole fifth step with you. But I made a commitment to at least try this. I did. And for the first time, I got that I had alcoholism. I really did. That I was powerless over alcohol. So anyway, I got back to my recovery home, and I started working with my sponsor. And that was June 6th of 2005, and I've been continuously sober since then. So I love the program of recovery. And if you get anything else from what I'm saying tonight, please know that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the fact that we read chapter 3 here. Oh, by the way, I'd like to welcome the 4 newcomers tonight. It's really awesome. I hope you hear something tonight that'll help you get to the pillow sober. That's what my sponsor tells me all the time. Welcome to our congratulations to our chip takers, especially to my my daughter Emily, who has 9 months, and family disease. Boy, I have 4 children. 3 of them are in recovery. So I'd like to think that I have something to do with them getting here, but then I got to remember that it's got nothing to do with me, and it's all about power greater than me, because I have not enough power to stop any of my kids from drinking. kind of, you know, that's why I really appreciate the program of Al-Anon, because I learned a lot from them about how I'm supposed to carry this message. And I love meetings to read Chapter 3. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics, and I needed the big book Alcoholics Anonymous to tell me exactly what a real alcoholic was. I thought that I was pretty good at drinking. I thought I was, you know, on holidays, like New Year's, I'd stay home because I was professional. I'd let the amateurs do it. I was a really good drunk driver. I had no problem mixing up a 40-ounce margarita, putting it in a cup holder, and driving my children around. No problem at all with doing that. Never got a drunk driving ticket. Never did. I don't know how. One time I got pulled over by I'd driven to the Denver. I'm a big Denver Broncos fan, and the Denver Broncos had beaten Cleveland in the AFC Championship game, and I drank the entire game, and I drove home. Two blocks away from my house, a guy ran a stop sign, and I hit him. And the cop did the roadside sobriety test, and I failed miserably. I could hardly even walk. And he goes, well, everybody said you really almost got away from the guy and your driving was really good, so we were going to do something we never, ever do, and we're going to let you go. And I went, whew. And he goes, you just walk home. And so that saved me from those kind of consequences. I didn't have those consequences, so I never got court-mandated to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know. Maybe I would have got in there before I was 50 years old if I had, but who knows. You know, it took every drink that I took to get me to where I am today, and I'm okay with whatever it took. John Spinella, you know, he helped me with that first step, and what I found out was that I got a couple bad things going for me, that I had this abnormal reaction to alcohol, and that's when I take a drink, I really don't know when I'm going to stop. And I like I said, he helped me go through my history of my drinking, and I found that to be the case all the time. You know, I'm the kind of guy that I could pull off drinking a couple beers once in a while, but then I could also see where, you know, I'd intended to drink a couple beers, and it ended up being a 4 or 5 month drinking spree. So, and then he asked me, you know, he helped me figure out that whenever I wanted to drink, I'd always drink again. And those two things, you know, we have 20 questions. Those two things make me an alcoholic. The 20 questions are really helpful. I took the test. I think Lois got 18 out of 20. I got 20 out of 20. And I convinced myself, and I could tell you I wasn't an alcoholic. I could tell you that I wasn't an alcoholic. And, because I was special, you know, and I almost died of my uniqueness, you know, I really did. But thank God for good sponsorship in the Book of Recovery that's outlined in the first 164 pages of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it saved my life. Once I caught alcoholism, he outlined a practical program of action that I've adopt as a way of life, and just like the 12 steps said, I told you I had a problem with the God concept. I started my first thought about what my concept of God was that I remembered in 1974 I did some really 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 killer Orange Sunshine, and I felt this connection to the universe, and I said, that's it, that'll be my higher power. And it worked for me. It really did. And it allowed me the willingness to continue to take the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then by the time I got to the 12th step, I can tell you that I was spiritually awake, that I had a spiritual awakening. And I, like Jeff, thank you for sharing tonight. I really appreciate you coming here and doing that. Like Jeff, I call it my higher power God. That just seems to be a pretty good name for him. So I have no problem if whatever your higher power is, be it Buddha, be it Jesus, I really don't care. Is all I urge you to do is find a power greater than you, because otherwise you probably won't stay. And I'm just very grateful that I was able to do that with like with my sponsor. That first step was really hard for me. It really was. I did not want to admit alcoholism. And then, you know, when I finally got that one down, my, you know, and I told my sponsor I was ready to move on. The second one seemed enormous. You know, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Thank you. You know, good sponsorship showed me that, you know, I thought the sanity to that I was going to be restored to was that I wouldn't do the stupid things that I did when I was drinking and using. And what I found out was the insanity that I was suffering from was that I would delude myself to take that drink. That a guy that is dying from liver disease that swallows a handful of acetaminophen and mixed with whatever they have in Oxycontin and alcohol is that's not normal. And the little kid that drinks and throws up and starts saving more alcohol, that's not normal. The sanity is that I recognize what that first drink will do to me, and that's the sanity that the tenth step promises that you'll be restored to. The third step came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. There we go. That was another. I was going. Well, this is, you know. I'm telling you that I got this little shred of willingness to believe in God, and now you're going to tell me I got to turn my will and my life over to Him. And my sponsor said, you know, John, you're kind of special, so I'm going to make this really easy for you. He goes, for you, is all I want you to do is say that you'll turn your will and your life over to Alcoholics Anonymous, that you'll do the work of the rest of the steps. And I said, John, I can do that. And I did. And I did a kind of a crappy job on my fourth step, and I kind of wasn't totally truthful on my first fifth step. But those are really powerful steps. I did them to the best of my ability at the time. And I firmly believe that. I kind of broke away from John at that time, and I thought it would be a good idea for me to move back to Colorado Springs, and I sponsored myself for a little while. Don't suggest that. Steps five, I did step five with my sponsor. Steps six and seven, I mean, they're two paragraphs in the big book. And I read the paragraphs, I was going, cool. Six and seven, done. Made kind of a crappy list of people that I wanted to pay back and didn't really worry about the ones that I didn't. Went back and told a whole bunch of people I was sorry. A whole bunch of people, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. And then, you know, it wasn't really working, and I was scared I was going to drink in Colorado, so I got on a plane. I lasted there for just a few months, and I came back to California. And here I got another sponsor. My sponsor now, his name's Jim Holder. He doesn't mind me using his name in a meeting. So he uses it and freely wants me to make sure that if he was ever needed to be found, that we didn't know his last name. And Jim took me through the big book again. And I worked the steps in a whole new way. I worked them right out of the big book. Around this time, I think I started listening to speakers, and I kind of got... I started listening to these kooks from Texas, and these guys are like the right wingers of AA, and I mean they're big book thumping, and I love that, you know, I'm a little rigid about the big book, so it's one of the things that I pray for a little tolerance these days, because I sometimes get a little bit rigid about the program recovery, and if I don't think you're doing it my way, I don't think you're really doing it right. And I think there's, you know, my way is the right way. And I'll tell you what you're supposed to share about in meetings, and if you're sharing about something else, I'm gonna have to come up and tell you I don't like what you shared about. So I've done it. And you know, these are the things I try to work on today. I love the seventh step, and the seventh step has allowed me to be on a equal footing with you guys. And I thought I was better than you, or I was worse than you. And the seventh step has allowed me to see that I'm just a human being amongst a bunch of other human beings, and everything's okay. And you can do the program recovery this one's tough for me, but you know, if you do a step a month for 12 months, I won't yell at you anymore. So, and I thought that was wrong, because I think you should be able to get through the steps in a pretty short time. You know, I'm going, in the old days, they used to do it in a couple weeks. Well, we should do it like they did it back then. But I'm starting to get a little less rigid on that, a little. I hear in meetings sometimes that those are just suggestions. And I go, if you don't take the suggestions, then maybe you're not a real alcoholic. Because the book makes it very clear what a real alcoholic is. And Bill Wilson was very clear on exactly what an alcoholic was. Very clear. He called them real alcoholics, alcoholics of our type. And that's what I am. I'm the guy that when I drink, I don't know when I'm going to stop. And when I want to stop, I won't. And that makes me a real one. A real one. And thank God I'm a real one, because that means that the program recovery is going to probably work for me if I do it. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That describes a lot of people in this room. It does. And the very next line is, those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. That's the other people in this room. Those two sentences describe everybody in here tonight. And I hope you're willing to give your all to this program, because that's what it takes. Bill Wilson only called alcoholism an illness, that he never referred to it as a disease. It took the American Medical Association to declare it a disease later on. And the reason they did that is because it shows symptoms. And it shows progression. And those two things make it a disease. And they call it an always fatal disease. So always fatal. And that's kind of scary, you know. And we see people come in. I've been in around recovery quite a bit the last 5 years. And I see people come in here and treat it like it's a cold. And that's a little frustrating. And always fatal. That's pretty scary. Always fatal. If you're new here, welcome. I guess this meeting is I go to a men's stag that we really focus on sponsorship. I think that it's imperative to be sponsored. I tried it both ways. I tried being sponsored and sponsoring myself. Sponsorship really helps. I'm by no means perfect. We also hear in the meetings a lot of times, we are not saints. And I think that we read that in a lot of meetings. I don't think it's to tell anybody that. I think it's to remind ourselves, we're not saints. So I'm okay with being human today. I woke up this morning. That's kind of in the book. I'll read it. And this is on page 52. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. And that was me this morning. That was me this morning. But the reason I'm not drunk tonight is because I do some stuff. I do some stuff. So what I did this morning was I woke up in some fear. You know, things are not really comfortable for me right now. I got on my knees and I said a prayer. And I went to a meeting. And then I went and got a sponsee and I listened to his fifth step. And then I came here and spoke tonight, and all of these things. I do these spiritual exercises, these spiritual things, so that I don't have to drink tonight. What Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me slowly is what alcohol did for me quickly, and that's given me ease and comfort. And That's all I will really promise you is that the ease and comfort that you used to get from alcohol and drugs will be given to you by doing some simple things around this fellowship. There's a lot of activity to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of ways to stay busy. All that's really good, but the action is the steps. And my favorite step's the 12 step, that I get to do things like this. I get to sponsor guys. I have several people in this room that I sponsor. I try to sponsor my kids and my girlfriend. They don't really put up with that. But welcome to the new guys, and thanks for letting me share.
Let's thank our speaker again. All right, Lois has been asked to come up and read the promises, then lead us out in the closing prayer. Or Dave. Never mind.
I look like Lois. Hi, I'm Dave, and I'm an alcoholic. The promises. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. After a moment of silence for the alcoholic who's still suffering in and out of these rooms, will you please join me in the Lord's Prayer?